Right now, the world's most advanced artificial intelligence, the models that are capable of passing the bar exam or writing complex software, generating those crazy photorealistic videos from just a text prompt.
Yeah, it's everywhere.
Right, all of that is being stored on a piece of technology that really hasn't fundamentally changed since, what, like 1998? The spinning mechanical magnetic hard disk drive.
It is wild when you think about it.
It totally is, because you hear about the AI revolution
Yeah.
and you picture, I don't know, pristine silicon wafers, right? Glowing server racks just humming in some chilled room, data moving at the literal speed of light.
Exactly, the sci-fi version.
Yeah. But if you actually open up those massive server racks, the ones owned by the trillion-dollar cloud giants,
Yeah.
and you dig down to the foundational layer where all that AI data actually lives, sitting right at the dead center of this futuristic boom is a technology that makes a physical clicking sound when it writes data.
A physical click?
Yeah, it is the absolute definition of an industrial paradox. I mean, we are building the most advanced synthetic intelligence in human history, and we are storing its memories on spinning metal platters reading tiny magnetic pulses.
It sounds archaic.
It really does. We treat the cloud like it's this weightless, ethereal thing floating up in the atmosphere, but the cloud is incredibly heavy. It is millions of pounds of spinning metal.
So, welcome to this deep dive. Today, we're taking you into an exclusive, really in-depth, independent equity research report. This one is dated June 10th, 2026, and the subject is Western Digital Corporation.
Ticker symbol WDC.
Right, WDC. They build those hard disk drives. And the mystery that this research report tries to solve is just incredibly compelling.
Oh, it's fascinating.
Okay, let's unpack this. Because how does a relatively boring legacy mechanical hardware maker suddenly achieve 50% gross margins and get priced by the stock market like some, hyper-growth software as a service company?
Which is exactly what's happening.
Yeah, because right now this stock has rocketed roughly 10 times from its 52-week low. It went from about $51 all the way up to around $518 a share.
Which is just a massive move. And, the report we're looking at today is essentially a masterclass in market structure,
Yeah.
Supply discipline, and crucially, and we'll get into this, a massive accounting illusion.
An illusion.
Yeah, a total mirage that the research firm believes is currently fooling just a massive swath of retail investors right now.
Wow, okay, so our mission here is to figure out if we are looking at a permanent new era of technological dominance for Western Digital,
Yeah.
fueled by the endless data hunger of AI, or if this is a classic boom and bust cycle disguised as a miracle.
Right. We have to separate a genuinely great business environment from a potentially devastating investment price.
Right, because a good company isn't always a good stock.
Yeah.
So I want to start by going back a bit, because to understand how Western Digital even got into a position to hit a $518 stock price, we have to talk about a massive structural divorce that just happened.
The SanDisk spinoff.
Exactly. If you looked at Western Digital a few years ago, it was a very different beast. In February of 2025, they finalized this massive corporate spinoff. They took their NAND and flash memory business, which most of you probably know as the brand SanDisk, and pushed it out into its own separate company.
And the research report puts a heavy, heavy emphasis on that event because we really cannot overstate how crucial that divorce was to the current narrative.
Why is that?
Well, we have to rewind to 2016. Back then, Western Digital looked at the landscape and saw flash memory, solid state drives, SSDs starting to really take off, and they got nervous.
I thought hard drives were dead.
Exactly. They were terrified. Their spinning hard drives were going to become obsolete. So they acquired SanDisk for roughly $19 billion.
$19 billion. That's a huge bet.
Massive. And they largely funded that acquisition by piling massive amounts of debt onto their balance sheet.
Which, I mean, on the surface, maybe that sounds logical to a boardroom in 2016. You make storage, flash is the new storage, buy the flash company and diversify your offerings.
Yeah,
You offer the customer everything they could possibly want.
that was the exact pitch to Wall Street.
Yeah.
The reality of the semiconductor and storage market, however, is much, much more brutal.
How so?
What they actually did was take their hard drive business, which is a highly capital-intensive, highly cyclical commodity business, and marry it to a flash memory business, which is arguably an even more brutal, more cyclical, more capital-intensive commodity business.
Oh man. So they just doubled down on the volatility.
Precisely. They put two volatile assets under one single massively debt-laden roof. It was, financially speaking, just a disastrous decade-long detour.
Disastrous how? Like, just underperforming the broader market or fundamentally breaking the company?
Fundamentally crippling their ability to generate returns for shareholders. I mean, the debt burden meant that every time the storage cycle turned downward, which it does every few years, right, when the industry overbuilds factories, Western Digital was basically fighting for its life.
Because they still had to service all that debt from the SanDisk purchase.
Exactly. The combined entity depressed their return on invested capital so severely that they were actually forced to suspend their dividend entirely in 2020. They were trapped.
Oh.
Yeah, it took a very aggressive push from an activist investor, Elliott Management, who basically looked at the math and said, you have to separate these two businesses before they drag each other down completely.
Okay, so they finally listen. They spin off the SanDisk flash business in 2025. And what remains? What exactly is the Western Digital that investors are buying today at $518 a share?
What remains is a vastly cleaner, structurally superior asset. Post-spin, Western Digital is an 89% pure-play bet on cloud and hyperscale nearline storage.
Okay, let's pause there because that sounds like heavy corporate jargon.
Yeah.
Pure-play bet on hyperscale nearline storage. Break that down for someone who just, you know, uses a laptop.
Sure, yeah. Think about how you used to buy storage. You would go to a big box store. You'd buy a 1 terabyte external hard drive to back up your family photos, right?
Yeah.
You'd put it on your desk.
Yeah, like a little My Passport drive or whatever.
Exactly. That is the consumer or client segment. For Western Digital today, that consumer business has structurally declined to just about 11% of their revenue.
Really? Just 11%?
It is practically a side hustle at this point. The core business now, that 89%, is selling massive high-capacity drives, currently 26-terabyte and 32-terabyte monsters, by the tens of thousands.
Whoa.
And they are selling them almost exclusively to hyperscalers.
And hyperscalers, just to clarify for you guys listening, are the absolute giants. Amazon Web Services, Microsoft Azure, Google Cloud, Meta, the companies building the infrastructure for the entire internet.
Yes. There are essentially just 7 massive cloud customers in the world that dictate the vast majority of this demand. And the reason we use the term nearline storage is actually really important here.
Okay. What does nearline mean?
In a massive data center, you have hot data. That's things that need to be accessed in a millisecond, like the operating system or the immediate application you're using right now. That sits on really expensive flash memory or RAM.
Makes sense. It needs to be fast.
Right. Then you have cold data. These are archival backups that you might not look at for years. That often sits on actual magnetic tape, which is incredibly cheap, but terribly, terribly slow.
Like actual tape, like a cassette.
Yeah, essentially magnetic tape reels. But nearline is the massive middle tier. It is the warm data. It needs to be accessible quickly, but there is so much of it that you cannot possibly afford to put it all on premium flash memory.
And that ties directly back to the AI boom.
Exactly. If we connect this to the bigger picture, the entire math of the tech industry changed with the build out of artificial intelligence over the last 2 years. The research report really highlights that AI inference, the constant creation of synthetic training data, and these AI agents running autonomously are generating literal mountains of data.
Because if an AI model is generating thousands of images or, you know, processing massive data sets, all of that has to sit somewhere.
Yep. It creates an insatiable need for the absolute cheapest possible bulk storage for these massive data lakes.
That is a staggering shift in a business model. I mean, you go from a diversified company trying to convince millions of individual people to buy a hard drive for $50 to a hyper-concentrated company sitting across a boardroom table from just 7 mega corporations who are ordering exabytes of capacity at a time.
It's a totally different game.
But wait, I'm looking at this and it feels incredibly dangerous. Like, if 89% of their revenue is tied to the cloud, aren't they entirely at the mercy of those 7 companies?
Absolutely.
What happens if 3 of them suddenly decide, you know what, we overbuilt our AI clusters this year, we have enough storage, we're going to take the next 6 months off from buying?
You have put your finger on the exact structural risk of the new post-spin Western Digital. It is an extreme concentration risk, and it creates what financial analysts call violent operating leverage.
Yeah, okay, violent operating leverage, meaning the swings up and down are magnified.
Greatly magnified. Western Digital owns massive factories, huge clean rooms, and complex manufacturing equipment. Those are fixed costs. They have to pay for that infrastructure, whether Amazon buys one drive or 1 million drives.
Right. The factory costs the same to run.
Right. So right now, because demand from those seven hyperscalers is so intense, Western Digital is operating well past their break-even point. That means every incremental exabyte of storage they sell drops almost straight to the bottom line as pure profit.
Oh, wow.
That is why their gross margins hit 50%. But if there is a sudden air pocket in AI capital expenditures, like if those few hyperscalers pause just to digest the capacity they've already bought, that exact same leverage works in reverse.
Because the factories don't magically get cheaper to run just because the orders stop coming in.
Exactly. The fixed costs eat you alive instantly. A hyperscaler CapEx digestion period would hit Western Digital far harder and far faster today than it would have back when they had the SanDisk business and a larger consumer division to, you know, cushion the blow.
It sounds like they're walking a tightrope without a net.
It is incredibly lucrative while the wind is at their back,
yeah.
But a single gust from the hyperscaler demand environment could knock them off completely.
So if the hyperscalers hold all the cards in terms of buying power, why are they allowing Western Digital to charge them prices that result in 50% profit margins? I mean, if I'm Microsoft or Google and I'm buying millions of these things, I'm squeezing my suppliers for every single penny.
That's a great question.
Because to understand why the hyperscalers are throwing so much money at Western Digital right now, you have to look at who else they could possibly buy from. And the answer is basically no one.
Yeah, this is where the structural beauty of the hard disk drive industry really shines through in the research report. The market for hard drives is a tight, rational, three-player oligopoly. You have Seagate, Western Digital, and Toshiba.
Just those three.
Together, those three companies control over 95% of all global shipments.
Three companies control the entire global supply of the foundational storage for the internet. That is wild.
It really is.
But if the margins are hitting 50%, that is basically an open invitation for competition, right?
Mm-hmm.
In any normal industry, if a company is making a 50% margin on a physical product, some massive tech conglomerate or a sovereign wealth fund is going to back a startup, build a factory, and take a piece of that massive profit pool. Why hasn't anyone else jumped in?
Because the moat around this industry is practically medieval. The report refers to these as Greenwald barriers to entry, named after the economist Bruce Greenwald, who specializes in competitive advantages. Why has there been no new hard drive entrant in literally decades? It comes down to physics and patents.
Mm-hmm.
To build a modern hard drive, it requires a multi-decade learning curve in something called areal density, which is the science of how tightly you can pack magnetic bits onto a physical platter.
Right.
It requires tens of billions of dollars in upfront capital just to attempt to catch up.
And it's not just about building a clean room, right? Like, you can't just buy the hard drive machines off the shelf.
Not at all. You have to navigate thousands of active patents covering complex physics, the chemical makeup of the media substrates, and the aerodynamics of the head stacks.
The head stacks.
Yeah, think about what a read-write head in a hard drive actually does. It is essentially a microscopic airplane flying a fraction of a nanometer above a metal disk that is spinning at thousands of revolutions per minute.
That sounds terrifyingly delicate.
It is. If the head touches the disk, it destroys the data. It's called a head crash. The aerodynamics, the material science, the microscopic actuators required to keep that head perfectly positioned while reading a magnetic pulse that is incredibly weak. Only three firms in the world possess the manufacturing know-how to build those components at scale.
The research report points out a really fascinating detail here that highlights the difference between hard drives and other tech components. Unlike the memory chip side of the business like NAND flash or DRAM, there is no Chinese state-backed entrant in the hard drive market.
That is a highly critical distinction for investors to understand.
Right.
If you look at NAND flash memory, you have six major global players fighting a brutal, relentless price war. And worse, you have heavily subsidized Chinese state-backed players like YMTC entering the market.
And I imagine they don't play by the same rules.
Not at all. YMTC doesn't care about Wall Street's expectations for profit margins. They are backed by Beijing, and they have taken over 10% market share by being completely indifferent to return on invested capital. Their goal is national strategic autonomy, not quarterly earnings.
Wow, so they'll just dump cheap product to win.
Exactly. And in DRAM memory, the major players are currently spending over $25 billion a year to build massive new capacity right into the peak of the demand cycle, which, you know, almost guarantees a future glut.
But in hard drives, Western Digital and Seagate are doing the exact opposite.
Completely the opposite. Western Digital's management is flatly refusing to add new unit capacity. The CEO has stated repeatedly on earnings calls that they are not adding any new physical unit capacity to their factories.
So they aren't building more drives?
No. They are keeping their capital expenditures, their CapEx, at a tiny 3 to 4% of their total revenue.
Which is incredibly disciplined.
It is what the research report calls the marathon capital cycle. Usually, in a commodity market, high returns attract new supply. Someone builds a new factory to capture the high prices, the market gets flooded with product, prices crash, and the returns are ruined.
The classic boom and bust.
Exactly. But here, because those barriers to entry are so insurmountable, no new competitors can enter. And because the three incumbents are acting rationally and disciplined, they are simply rationing the existing supply to meet the massive AI demand.
And when demand outstrips a rationed supply, what happens? They raise the price.
They raise the price.
It is textbook supply discipline. But I have to bring up the elephant in the room here. For my entire adult life, you know, reading tech blogs, I've been told about the death of disk.
Oh, yeah, we've all heard it.
Hasn't everyone been saying for 15 years that solid-state drives, flash memory, are going to completely replace clunky, noisy, spinning hard drives? I mean, my laptop doesn't have a hard drive. My phone doesn't have a hard drive. Why on earth are the most advanced, cash-rich hyperscalers in the world still buying mechanical hard drives in 2026? If they're building trillion-dollar AI data centers, why not just use the best, fastest technology available?
It all comes down to the total cost of ownership at a massive scale. SSDs absolutely won the performance tier. Your laptop has an SSD because it needs to boot up instantly and load applications in a fraction of a second.
Right.
But for massive data lakes storing exabytes of synthetic training data, absolute speed is less important than cost. The report highlights a staggering financial data point. Let's say you were building a specific data center pod, a mixed deployment using a combination of some SSDs for caching and mostly HDDs for the bulk storage, costs about $6.0 million over a three-year lifespan.
Okay, $6 million.
If you tried to build that exact same data storage capacity using only SSDs, eliminating the hard drives entirely, the cost over 3 years would be roughly $25.2 million.
Wait, $6 million versus $25
million? Yeah.
For the exact same amount of storage space.
The exact same capacity.
That is not a gap you can just gloss over. I mean, even if you were a trillion-dollar cloud provider like Amazon, you can't justify spending four times as much on infrastructure just so the data loads a tiny bit faster when it doesn't really need to.
And what the report finds fascinating is that this cost gap actually widened significantly over the last year.
Really? I thought flash was getting cheaper.
Historically, SSDs were about six times more expensive per terabyte than hard drives. But recently, that gap blew out to over 16 times more expensive.
Why did it get so much worse?
It was driven by a shortage in NAND flash memory. The AI boom sucked up so much high bandwidth memory for the actual GPUs that it constrained the supply chain for standard flash storage, causing SSD prices to spike violently.
Right.
Meanwhile, because hard drives don't rely on silicon wafers in the same way, their base manufacturing costs stayed relatively flat. So the long predicted death of disk has been pushed out yet again.
So it's safe for now.
As long as the marginal terabyte of AI data being created is highly cost-sensitive bulk storage rather than latency-sensitive hot data, mechanical hard drives will maintain their stronghold. Right now, today, hyperscalers store roughly 80% of all their cloud bits on spinning hard drives.
80%. Yeah. Okay, so let's summarize the setup here because it feels like a riddle.
Yeah.
You have an industry where end demand for storage is compounding at over 25% annually because of the AI boom.
Yep.
You have only three companies making the product. They're completely protected from any new competitors entering the market by physics and patents. They are significantly cheaper than the alternative flash technology. And, crucially, they are flat out refusing to build new factories to manufacture more units.
That's the setup.
If you are making more physical hard drives, how on earth do you meet a 25% annual growth in data demand?
That is the trillion-dollar engineering question. Because they aren't making more drives, they are figuring out how to make much denser drives.
Let's try to conceptualize this, because the physics of it are mind-bending. I was reading this part of the research report, trying to picture what is actually happening inside these clean rooms. And I came up with an analogy. I want to see if this tracks with the actual science.
Okay, let's hear it.
Imagine trying to write a novel. Normally, you write it on a piece of paper. If you need to write a longer novel, you get a second piece of paper. That is adding unit capacity.
Mm-hmm.
But Western Digital refuses to buy a second piece of paper.
Right.
Instead, they are forcing their engineers to write that entire novel on a single grain of rice. And to fit more chapters, they just keep making the pen tip finer and finer, writing smaller and smaller letters on that same grain of rice.
I like this.
But here's the catch. That grain of rice is flying past the pen at 100 miles per hour.
That is a remarkably accurate way to visualize it. In the storage industry, this is called increasing the areal density. It is the amount of data you can pack into a single square inch of the magnetic platter.
So just cramming more bits in?
Yes. Or think of it like a suitcase. Instead of buying a second suitcase, which is adding unit capacity, Western Digital is inventing magical new vacuum seal bags to stuff 40% more clothes into the exact same carry-on. The cost of the suitcase stays the same, but you charge the customer for all the extra clothes inside.
That's brilliant.
If Western Digital takes a fleet of drives that average 23 terabytes of capacity and through engineering upgrades them to hold 32 terabytes, they just shipped about 40% more data capacity, 40% more exabits to the customer without manufacturing a single extra physical drive.
They just wrote the letters smaller on the rice.
Exactly. It requires zero new factory lines to build the physical metal enclosures. And because the material cost of the aluminum case, the spinning motor, and the basic assembly is a fixed cost, every extra terabyte they pack into that same physical footprint is almost entirely pure profit margin.
It sounds like an incredible business model. But making the pen tip finer has to hit a physical limit eventually, right? Like, you can't just shrink magnetic bits forever without breaking the laws of physics.
And you just hit on it.
And this is where the report outlines a massive, high-stakes technological war happening right now between the top two players, Western Digital and Seagate. They are taking two completely different, highly risky approaches to solving this physics problem.
Right. To understand the war, you have to understand the physical limit they hit. It's called the super paramagnetic effect.
Okay, big word. What does that mean?
As you make a magnetic grain smaller and smaller to pack more of them onto the disk, the grain becomes physically unstable. It becomes so small that normal room temperature fluctuations can cause the magnetic charge to randomly flip from a 1 to a 0.
Wait, so the data literally erases itself?
It literally erases itself.
That sounds like a catastrophic problem if you were trying to store the world's most valuable AI data. How do you stop it from flipping?
You have to use a much stiffer, highly coercive magnetic material for the platter, a material that requires a massive amount of energy to change its magnetic state.
Okay, makes sense.
But that creates a new problem. If the material is so stiff that room temperature won't flip it, the tiny magnetic read-write head hovering above the disk isn't strong enough to flip it either. You can't write any data to the disk.
So you've built an incredibly stable disk that is entirely useless.
Precisely.
What is Seagate's solution to this?
Seagate is leading the charge with a technology called HAMR, which stands for heat-assisted magnetic recording.
Heat-assisted.
Their solution to the stiff material problem is to integrate a microscopic plasmonic laser into the read-write head. To write a bit of data, the laser fires, heating a microscopic spot on the spinning platter to about 450 degrees Celsius. That's roughly 840 degrees Fahrenheit.
Wait, stop right there. You're telling me there is a laser firing inside the hard drive, heating a piece of metal to 840 degrees while it is spinning thousands of times a minute.
Yes.
That is insane.
Heating it up softens the magnetic stiffness for just a fraction of a nanosecond, allowing the magnetic pulse from the head to flip the bit and write the data. And then the spot cools down almost instantly before the data can degrade.
Wow.
And this laser is firing billions of times every single second, exactly pinpointing tracks that are nanometers wide.
That sounds impossibly hard to manufacture reliably at the scale of millions of drives.
Yeah.
I mean, the thermal stress alone on the materials must be a nightmare. Sounds like a science experiment, not a consumer product.
It is an incredible engineering feat, but you are entirely right about the manufacturing difficulty. And that brings us to the massive economic wager that Western Digital made.
What did they do?
Western Digital looked at the sheer complexity of HAMR, the massive ramp-up risks, the manufacturing yield issues, the potential for early drives to fail in the field due to thermal stress, and they decided to be a fast follower.
Meaning they let Seagate take all the arrows in the back trying to pioneer the lasers?
Exactly. Let Seagate pay for the R&D mistakes.
What is Western Digital doing instead to keep up with the capacity demands today?
Instead of rushing HAMR to market, Western Digital bet that they could squeeze blood from a stone using their older, more established non-laser technologies. They combined energy-assisted perpendicular magnetic recording, which is an older tech, with a very clever software architecture called Ultra SMR.
Okay, explain the SMR part.
SMR stands for shingled magnetic recording. Normally, data tracks on a disk are laid out side by side with tiny gaps between them so they don't interfere with each other. SMR realizes that the read head is actually smaller than the write head, so it overlaps the data tracks, much like shingles on a roof.
Oh, so you write one track and then the next track overlaps it slightly. That saves physical space. But if I need to change a piece of data on the bottom shingle, I have to pick up all the shingles on top of it first, right? That sounds incredibly slow.
It is. It makes rewriting data very complex and slow. But remember, this is for nearline archival storage. You write the data once, and you mostly just read it later. For that specific use case, it is brilliant.
Oh, that makes sense.
By combining these mature technologies, Western Digital is currently qualifying a 40-terabyte drive without having to use a single laser.
I'm looking at this and trying to figure out who is winning. I mean, if Seagate has the shiny, newer, more advanced laser technology that theoretically has a much higher capacity ceiling, and Western Digital is just wringing the last drops of performance out of older, overlapping track tech,
yeah.
Why is Western Digital's stock the one going parabolic?
Because on Wall Street, it is all about the immediate financial scoreboard. While Seagate has the technological lead on paper, the research report notes that Western Digital is absolutely crushing them on cost execution in the present moment.
Because they aren't paying for lasers yet.
Exactly. Think about it. Western Digital didn't have to spend billions retooling their factories for lasers yet. They are using depreciated equipment to pump out highly profitable drives. Western Digital is currently posting gross margins of about 50.5% compared to Seagate's roughly 39%.
That is a massive difference.
It is. That software-driven Ultra SMR tech gives Western Digital a massive 20% capacity uplift using the exact same hardware costs. They are defending their market share from a position of immense cost leadership.
But there has to be a cliff approaching, right? They can't just delay the physics problem forever. Eventually, you can't overlap the shingles any further.
Exactly. It is a very dangerous timing bet. Western Digital is planning to roll out its own HAMR laser drives in volume by roughly 2027. They have to transition eventually.
So they are going to do lasers too.
They have to. And the massive risk highlighted in the report is execution. If Western Digital's 2027 rollout slips by 6 months, or if they encounter major manufacturing yield issues when they try to scale it, while Seagate successfully scales up their 50-terabyte AMR drives and works out all the bugs, Western Digital risks permanently losing the high-capacity, high-margin tier of the hyperscale market to Seagate.
Wow.
It is a very live existential execution risk hanging over that 50% margin.
So on paper today, Western Digital looks like absolute geniuses. They have avoided the massive R&D sinkhole of early lasers. They're squeezing 50% margins out of old factories, and the stock is soaring. But here is where this deep dive gets really intense.
Yeah, this is the crux of it.
The research report issues a massive flashing red warning to retail investors. It claims that the financial numbers people are looking at on their stock screener apps are hiding a dangerous multi-billion dollar illusion.
This is perhaps the single most crucial piece of analysis in the entire report for anyone looking at the stock. What's fascinating here is how the accounting rules actually distort the reality.
Let's get into it.
If you are sitting at home right now and you pull up a brokerage app on your phone, Robinhood, E-Trade, whatever, and you type in WDC, the app is going to present you with a set of standard financial metrics that look incredibly cheap for a company sitting at the center of the AI boom.
Right. If I pull it up, I see a trailing earnings per share, or EPS, of about $16.70. I see a massive 86% return on equity. And the big one, the price-to-earnings ratio, the PE,
yeah,
looks like it's hovering around a very reasonable 30 times earnings.
Looks great.
Yeah, if I'm a retail investor looking for an AI play and I compare a 30 PE to NVIDIA or Microsoft, I'm thinking I just found a deeply undervalued hidden gem. So why is my app lying to me?
Your app is giving you the GAAP accounting reality, generally accepted accounting principles. But in this specific case, GAAP accounting is completely distorting the economic reality. It all comes back to that divorce we talked about at the beginning.
The SanDisk spinoff.
Right. When Western Digital spun off the SanDisk flash memory business into a new independent public company, Western Digital did not distribute 100% of the shares to their investors. They retained a roughly 19.9% stake in the new SanDisk entity for themselves.
Okay, so they still own a fifth of their ex-partner's new company. How does that distort Western Digital's own earnings?
Under the Financial Accounting Standards Board rules, Western Digital has to carry that 19.9% stake on their balance sheet as an asset. And crucially, they have to mark it to market every single quarter.
Mark to market. Meaning, whatever the stock price of SanDisk happens to be on the last day of the quarter, Western Digital has to adjust the value of the asset on their own books to match it.
Exactly. Now, what happened to tech stocks, especially semiconductor and memory stocks, over the last 9 months during the AI boom?
They went vertical.
SanDisk's stock price soared. Mm-hmm. Because of that massive increase in the stock price, Western Digital had to write up the value of their asset. The research report dug into the 10Q filings and found that Western Digital booked roughly $4.4 billion of non-cash, non-operating mark-to-market gains over the last 9 months.
Wait, non-cash? So no actual money changed hands. Western Digital didn't sell the shares and deposit $4.4 billion into a bank account.
Not a single dollar of actual cash from operations. It is an entirely paper gain. But, and here's the trap under accounting rules, that $4.4 billion paper gain flows straight into their reported net income.
You're kidding.
It artificially injects billions into their bottom line. It has absolutely nothing to do with how many hard drives Western Digital is manufacturing, how efficient their supply chain is, or how profitable their core business is.
That is insane. It's like looking at a financial funhouse mirror. I mean, I run a stock screen looking for profitable companies. The algorithm sees this massive net income number. It calculates a low PE ratio, and I pour my retirement savings in, totally unaware that the E in that PE ratio is pumped up by the paper stock gains of a completely different company.
Exactly. And the thing about paper gains on tech stocks is
they can reverse violently, right?
Absolutely. What the market gives, the market can take away. In fact, if you look back at the previous fiscal year, that exact same mark-to-market adjustment was a massive loss because memory stocks were down. It swings wildly.
Wow.
So the research report recalculates the economic reality for the investor. If you strip out that $4.4 billion accounting artifact, the normalized trailing earnings per share is not $16.70. It is actually somewhere between $7.30 and $7.50.
That is a massive haircut. More than half of the reported earnings just vaporize when you look at the actual business.
Mm-hmm. It changes every single metric. That incredible 55% net margin you might see quoted in a bullish news article. The normalized reality of the core hard drive business is about a 24% net margin.
Which is still good, right?
Oh, it's still a great business right now, but nowhere near the absolute money printing machine the headline numbers suggest.
So what does this all mean for the current stock price? If the real earnings are that much lower, let's recalibrate. How expensive is this stock actually at $518 a share?
If we look forward, the research analysts project that the real normalized EPS for this upcoming fiscal year is around $9.90. At a stock price of $518, that means the stock is actually trading at roughly 52 times this year's core earnings.
52 times earnings for a mechanical hardware manufacturer.
It gets more extreme. The report looks at valuation metrics that strip out earnings volatility entirely, things like price to book value and price to sales. On those metrics, Western Digital is currently trading at the 99.5th and 99.6th percentiles of its own historical valuation range over the last two decades.
The 99th percentile.
Yeah.
I want to make sure the gravity of that lands for you guys listening.
Yeah.
That means investors buying today are paying more for a single dollar of Western Digital sales or a single dollar of their hard assets than they have at almost any other point in the company's entire corporate history.
Precisely. The market is pricing in absolute unyielding perfection. They are paying a hyper-premium 52 times multiple because the consensus narrative believes Western Digital has fundamentally escaped its highly cyclical past.
They think it's just going to go up forever.
The market thinks this isn't a cycle anymore. They think the AI boom has created a permanent plateau of high margins.
Which brings us to the core tension of the entire analysis. The market believes the business cycle is dead. But let's look at the actual recent history of this supposedly permanent plateau. We mentioned those incredible margins earlier, the gross margin exploding from 22.2% in fiscal year 2023 up to 50.2% in the third quarter of 2026. Operating margins hit nearly 36%.
Yep.
If you just look at that chart, it looks like a company that has reached a new paradigm of profitability.
It does look like a new paradigm, until the research report throws a bucket of cold water on the hype by forcing us to look just 24 months into the past.
What happened 24 months ago?
It is absolutely crucial to remind investors that just 2 years ago, in fiscal years 2023 and 2024, this exact same asset base, the exact same clean rooms, the same technology patents, the same basic engineering workforce posted operating losses.
Wait, lost?
They lost $548 million operationally in 2023.
I have to pause there because it breaks my brain a little bit. The exact same factories that are printing money today at a 50% margin were losing $500 million just 2 years ago. How is that even mathematically possible without gross mismanagement?
It is not mismanagement. It is the textbook physical reality of operating leverage in hardware manufacturing. Think about running a massive semiconductor or hard drive fab. It is not like running a software company where your main cost is engineers' salaries.
Right. Code is cheap to copy.
Exactly. With hard drives, you have to pay for billions of dollars of complex machinery, incredibly expensive clean room environments, and massive power contracts, regardless of whether a hyperscaler orders one drive or 10 million drives.
The fixed costs are a massive unmoving boulder.
Exactly. When end market demand is low, like it was during the PEC digestion period of 2023, you still have to pay for the boulder. You are spreading those massive fixed costs over fewer drives sold, and the cost per unit skyrockets.
You're losing money on every drive.
Those fixed costs eat you alive. That is what drove the brutal operating losses. But when demand surges, like the current panic buying for AI clusters, you pass your break-even point. Because the fixed costs are already covered, almost every single extra dollar of revenue from that point forward drops straight to the bottom line.
I see.
That extreme leverage is the physical mechanism driving the massive 50% gross margins today.
So operating leverage makes you look like a visionary genius on the way up, but it will absolutely crush your skull on the way down.
Perfectly said.
But if you listen to Western Digital's management on their earnings calls, they claim this time really is different, right? They point to these new long-term agreements or LTAs with the hyperscalers. They are claiming they are essentially sold out of capacity through 2026. Doesn't that legally protect them from a sudden down cycle?
That LTA narrative is the absolute core of the Wall Street bull thesis right now, but the independent research report applies some serious scrutiny to it. Yes, they appear to have firm purchase orders through the end of 2026. But the market is pricing the stock as if those margins last forever. What about 2027 through 2029? Management touts these LTAs as a shield against cyclicality. But the report notes that when analysts have repeatedly pressed management on earnings calls, asking if these contracts are legally binding take-or-pay agreements with firm price floors, management consistently dodges the question.
What do you mean by take-or-pay?
Take-or-pay means the hyperscaler is legally obligated to either take delivery of the hard drives at the agreed-upon price or pay a massive financial penalty.
So it's a real guarantee.
Right. But management refuses to confirm if they have that level of protection. They use squishy corporate phrases like the contracts have significant commercial teeth.
Commercial teeth? That sounds like PR speak.
Because it is. History tells us a very different story. In a severe tech downturn, when Amazon or Microsoft decide they need to slash their capital expenditures, these so-called long-term agreements with hardware suppliers often magically turn into soft promises that can entirely be renegotiated under the threat of losing future business.
And the research report points out a massive red flag regarding how they are actually achieving these current margins. It's not just that they are selling a higher volume of drives, it's the pricing dynamics.
The pricing is fascinating.
Yeah. Western Digital originally gave guidance that the cost per terabyte they charge customers would decline by about 7% a year, which is the historical norm for tech hardware. Things usually get cheaper over time, but instead they saw a 9% increase year over year.
That is a massive 16 percentage point swing from their own internal models. And the research report argues that this is not evidence of a permanent new pricing paradigm. It is the undeniable signature of acute supply tightness.
Meaning?
It is panic buying. The hyperscalers were suddenly terrified they wouldn't have enough storage to train their massive new AI models, so they paid whatever Western Digital asked just to secure the physical drives.
Which points to a huge looming danger. I mean, if even a tiny fraction of this current demand is what analysts call a one-time build pull, meaning hyperscalers aren't just buying for their normal daily needs, but are panic hoarding hard drives to provision massive new AI data centers all at once, then the music has to stop eventually, right? Once the massive data centers are physically built and provisioned, the hoarding stops.
Exactly. And the historical data presented in the report shows that the market is ruthless when that music stops. If you look at how storage commodity equities behave historically, they usually give back 40 to 60% of their equity value within just 6 months of the average selling price of their product hitting its peak.
40 to 60% drop in 6 months.
Yes. If that 9% panic price surge rolls over and the industry goes back to a normal 7% annual price decline, the math is brutal. Those 50% gross margins will vanish almost instantly, and the stock's massive 52 times valuation multiple will compress violently as investors panic.
That level of extreme volatility makes the decisions of the CEO and the board of directors absolutely critical right now. I mean, if they're making record cash from this panic buying, how they choose to spend it will define the company for the next decade. Which brings us to a fascinating section of the report looking at capital allocation and what feels like the haunting ghost of 2016.
The ghost of SanDisk.
Exactly. What exactly are they doing with all the cash they are generating right now?
Well, to be fair to management, and the report points this out, the new CEO, Irving Tan, has done a brilliant job cleaning up the balance sheet trauma from the last decade. Western Digital is currently generating huge amounts of free cash flow, about $2.2 billion in just the first 9 months of this fiscal year alone.
That's a lot of cash.
And they use those retained SanDisk shares we talked about earlier in a very clever, highly structured, tax-free way to extinguish large swaths of their debt. They took their gross debt down from a suffocating $7.5 billion down to just $1.6
billion. What?
They actually achieved a net cash position of almost $469 million and secured an investment-grade credit rating.
That is a phenomenal turnaround. They basically used the AI stock market bubble in SanDisk shares to pay off the mortgage on their house.
Basically, yes.
But given the tone of this report, there is a massive but coming regarding how they are spending the rest of the money, isn't there?
A massive red flag. The issue is share buybacks.
Okay.
After cleaning up the debt, Western Digital has spent $1.92 billion buying back its own stock. Now, buying back stock isn't inherently bad. It reduces the share count and boosts earnings per share.
Right. Companies do it all the time.
The problem is the timing and the valuation. They didn't buy back the stock when it was sitting at $51 a share and looked deeply undervalued. They rapidly accelerated their share purchases exactly as the stock hit all-time highs. The report notes they were buying heavily at around $259 a share right before the recent split-adjusted run-up.
Wait, I'm looking at the timeline here. And didn't they do exactly this kind of pro-cyclical, top-ticking behavior back in 2016?
Yeah.
I mean, think about the ghost of that SanDisk acquisition.
That's the exact parallel.
Back in 2016, they bought SanDisk at the absolute peak of the flash memory hype cycle. They paid top dollar, loaded the company with debt, and ruined a decade of returns for their shareholders because they bought at the top of a cycle. Now, 10 years later, instead of buying another company at the peak, they are spending billions buying their own stock at the absolute peak of an AI hardware hype cycle at a 99th percentile valuation.
The report draws a profoundly concerning parallel between the two events. It violates a core fundamental tenet of capital cycle investing. You do not return the bulk of your capital via buybacks when your highly cyclical stock is trading at its most expensive valuation in company history. You are supposed to buy low and sell high, not use shareholder cash to buy at the absolute top.
And what makes it look even worse is what the executives are doing with their own personal money.
Oh, the contrast with insider behavior is glaring. According to the SEC filings analyzed in the report, there have been exactly zero open market stock purchases by insiders.
Zero.
Not a single executive is using their own personal money to buy Western Digital stock at these valuation levels. Instead, executives have discretionarily sold tens of millions of dollars worth of stock into this massive strength.
That is always, always a bad look. The company is using billions of dollars of shareholder money to prop up the stock at the top of the cycle, while the executives are personally cashing out their chips and heading for the exits. Why on earth would management aggressively buy back stock at a 52 times multiple?
If we look deeply into the proxy statement and the executive compensation structure, the research report finds a very compelling clue. The CEO and the top executives' bonus packages are heavily tied to the absolute size of operating income and free cash flow generation. But there is a glaring, massive omission in the compensation formula.
What's missing?
Their payouts are not tied to return on invested capital or ROIC.
Ah, I see. If they are not judged on the return on the capital they spend, they don't care what price they pay for the stock.
Exactly. They are heavily incentivized to boost short-term headline metrics like earnings per share. And buybacks artificially boost EPS by shrinking the number of shares, which triggers their bonus. Ultimately destroys long-term shareholder value when the cycle turns.
Wow.
It explicitly incentivizes short-term metric boosting over long-term capital discipline.
So the balance sheet cleanup was objectively masterful, but the capital allocation decisions regarding their own equity suggest a management team that might be repeating a subtle but equally damaging variation of their historical mistakes from 2016.
Precisely.
So we have covered a massive amount of ground here, from the physics of lasers heating metal to 800 degrees, to accounting illusions, to executive bonus structures. Let's bring this all together and lay out the final verdict from the research report.
Let's do it.
We have a structurally sound, highly defensible three-player oligopoly. They are entirely protected from Chinese state competition. They are currently enjoying an incredible, unprecedented peak in AI data demand. But the stock is priced for absolute perfection, the true earnings are masked by paper gains, and the company is led by a management team aggressively buying back stock at the top of a cycle.
Right.
Where does that leave someone who is holding this stock or thinking about buying it?
The research report's final verdict on Western Digital at roughly $518 a share is a definitive hold.
A hold.
The analyst clearly acknowledges that Western Digital is a genuinely great business having a genuinely fantastic year. The AI demand is real. But at 52 times normalized forward earnings, the current price offers absolutely zero margin of safety for new capital. You are paying a flawless price for a company that operates in a fundamentally flawed, highly cyclical industry.
Let's clearly lay out what has to happen in the future for the bulls to be right and make money at 518, and what has to happen for the bears to be right.
Yeah.
What are the what must be true scenarios?
For the bull case to work for an investor buying today at 518, you essentially have to believe that the business cycle has been permanently repealed.
Which never happens.
Right. You have to believe that hyperscale exabyte demand will continue to compound at over 25% annually for years without a single quarter of digestion or pause. You must believe that the current panic pricing and supply tightness will stay permanently elevated.
That's a lot of faith.
It goes on. You have to believe that Western Digital's delayed 2027 HAM laser drive launch will execute flawlessly without ceding any market share to Seagate. And you have to believe that the cost threat from flash SSDs will stay far in the distance despite massive global investments in NAND capacity.
That is a staggering number of things that have to go perfectly right just to justify the current price.
And the bear case. For the bear case to materialize, you don't need a catastrophe. You simply have to believe that the immutable laws of history and physics will repeat themselves. You just have to believe that the current 50% gross margin is a peak driven by temporary supply tightness, not a new baseline.
Right, reverting to the mean.
Exactly. You have to believe that as demand eventually normalizes, Wall Street will look at a hardware manufacturer and violently compress the valuation multiple from 52 times earnings back down to a historical norm of 12 to 15 times earnings.
Which would crush the stock price.
And finally, you have to believe that the violent operating leverage that caused this exact same factory base to lose $500 million just 2 years ago will aggressively reassert itself when the hyperscalers inevitably take a breather.
This raises an important question. If 518 is priced for absolute perfection, what does the research report believe is the actual true normalized earnings power of this company across a full multi-year boom and bust cycle?
The report models out the next 5 years and estimates that in a normalized mid-cycle environment, smoothing out the massive AI peaks and the inevitable digestion troughs, this company probably earns between $8 and $11 per share.
Okay.
If you apply a reasonable, historically accurate multiple to that real earnings power, the target buy zone, the place where an investor actually has a margin of safety, is closer to $300 to $400 a share. It is certainly not the $685 price targets that some momentum-chasing analysts are screaming for on Wall Street right now.
And before we wrap up, we have to talk about one specific metric that explains how this stock acts on a daily basis. The report notes the beta of this stock is 2.16. For anyone listening who doesn't track beta, I want to explain what that means for your stomach if you own this stock.
Yeah, people need to hear this.
Beta measures volatility against the broader market. The S&P 500 has a beta of 1.0. A beta of 2.16 means this stock moves more than twice as violently as the overall market. Because of that massive fixed cost operating leverage we talked about, the billions spent on clean rooms and equipment, this company's profits and its stock price swing wildly. If the broader market sneezes, Western Digital catches pneumonia. If the tech market rallies, Western Digital goes to the moon.
It is a roller coaster. It is not a stable savings bond you buy and ignore for 10 years. The report summarizes the entire thesis perfectly with a great phrase. Western Digital right now is the disciplined sibling sold at a souffle price.
A souffle price. I love that. It looks huge. It looks impressive. It's rising rapidly in the oven. But if you poke it with a single pin of reality, a slight delay in a product launch, a single hyperscaler pausing orders for a month, the whole thing collapses in on itself.
Completely deflates.
The core realization here isn't denying the AI revolution. The company is real. The AI data demand is incredibly real. But the fatal flaw in the market's current logic is the assumption of permanence. Taking peak, panic-driven commodity hardware margins and projecting them out forever as if they are a sticky software subscription is historically how investors lose their shirts in cyclical tech stocks.
The true variant perception in this deep dive is refusing to capitalize peak commodity hardware margins as if they are permanent. It is understanding the physics of the product, the constraints of the supply chain, and the accounting illusions masking the true profitability.
So to wrap this up and connect it back to how you, the listener, look at the market, this deep dive is really a masterclass in separating a great business environment from a great investment price. It teaches you that you have to look past the headline PE ratios flashing on your stock screen or app. You have to dig into the 10Q filings, understand the accounting artifacts like that SanDisk paper gain, and respect the brutal cyclical history that the broader market is currently completely ignoring in its AI-fueled frenzy.
And as we close the book on this report, the underlying realities of this technology leave us with a final, somewhat philosophical question to ponder.
Let's hear it.
We've spent this entire time talking about the incredible, mind-bending cost efficiency of Western Digital's hard drives, how engineers are essentially writing novels on grains of rice to make it cheaper and cheaper to store mountains of AI-generated synthetic data. But if AI agents and language models are relentlessly creating endless petabyte-scale volumes of synthetic text, images, and logs that we feel compelled to store in these massive data lakes just because the hard drives make it cheap to do so, are we actually getting any smarter? Or has the incredible engineering of these spinning metal disks simply enabled a global digital hoarding crisis where our human ability to save absolutely everything has completely outpaced our ability to know what is actually worth keeping?
Wow, that is a truly wild thought to leave on. We're building the most advanced synthetic brains in the history of the world and fueling them by hoarding endless mountains of data on technology that, at its core, is just a tiny magnetic needle reading a spinning metal disk from the 1990s. Thanks for taking this deep dive with us.